Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Ultrasound Gel Podcast, gathering evidence from the literature. I'm Mike Pratz, and I have with me today Cray Bolger and Jacob Avila, and we'll be discussing a paper titled Accuracy of Point-of-Care Multi-Organ Ultrasonography for the Diagnosis of Pulmonary Embolism, published in Chest. Now, the way that I found this paper was that there was a great review of point-of-care ultrasound in PE that was published recently, kind of looking at all the literature, and this paper was titled Point-of-Care Ultrasound in the Diagnosis of Pulmonary Embolism, lead author Alessandro Squizzato. And that paper looked at several studies that had been done to see how valuable ultrasound is for making this diagnosis. And this was one of the best papers that they discussed. It's really interesting. It has lots of results. So let's talk about it, Cray.
Thanks, Mike. So this is by Nazarian et al. Out of Italy. And as Mike mentioned, it was published in Chest in May 2014. This is a prospective, so the chupacabra of research, multi-center study done at both community and academic facilities in Italy over a six-month period of time. And what the authors did is they had the clinicians who were seeing the patient obtain a Wells and D-dimer on patients who had a high suspicion of PE, that was the leading diagnosis. If either of those were positive, they then subsequently were enrolled in the study. And so they started with 510 patients who had suspected PE. Once the Wells and D-dimer were used to either rule out and some other exclusion criteria, they ended up with 357 patients. And this was kind of their basis of who they went and did ultrasounds on. There were several sonographers who performed these ultrasounds. Now, it's important to note that these were fairly trained sonologists, most of whom had had at least 5 years of experience or at least had an interest in physician-performed ultrasounds. So these weren't your run-of-the-mill emergency medicine doctors who use ultrasound on a daily basis but don't have specialized training in them. And so what they did is they had three different organ systems they were looking at: the heart, the lungs, and the veins. So for the heart, they did parasternal views looking at right ventricular diameter and diastolic diameter greater than 30 millimeters, and then an RV to LV ratio, right ventricular to left ventricular ratio, in the apical four chamber greater than 0.9. That was a positive finding in the heart views. In the lung views, they used eight different windows, four anterior and four posterior, two on each hemithorax, looking for subpleural consolidations. And this is a fairly novel topic as far as point-of-care ultrasound is concerned, and especially lung ultrasound. So the way the authors defined subpleural consolidations was anything that was immediately adjacent to the pleura, circular in nature, hypoechoic to anechoic, and greater than 0.5 centimeters. Again, this is a fairly new concept and still has some controversy, I think, surrounding it. So they looked for that in all eight fields. And then they also did a two-point or two-region venous ultrasound in the popliteal fossa and the femoral region looking for DVT. And so those were the images that they obtained, and then they obtained various sensitivities and specificities from these to kind of see which of these performed best, did they perform better in combination, and how did that pan out as far as diagnosing pulmonary embolism.
Right. Let me just summarize it, since it's a little bit complicated what they did. So I think that, and correct me if I'm wrong, Craig, but it looks like they were trying to see if when you take these three types of ultrasound exams, if you put them all together, does that give you a better test performance than all of them do individually? Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so then what they did is they took patients where they were worried about PE. So they thought this patient could have a PE. Everybody got Wells and D-dimered, and they threw out all the low probability people, either by Wells or D-dimer. And then those people all got all three of these ultrasounds. And then all those people also got a CT pulmonary angiogram. And so they compared to see how well does ultrasound pick up these pulmonary emboli compared to the CT. Is that accurate?
That is accurate, yes.
Okay, great. So now that we've established that, let's see how they did.
So leading the charge was lung ultrasound. of their positive pulmonary embolisms on CT scan, which was 133, they had 77 that had positive findings on the lung ultrasound. And interestingly, the most common spot of these eight windows that was positive was the inferior posterior bases bilaterally, which really speaks a lot because I don't know about you, Mike, but that's not a place I typically go looking.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, I would say when doing ultrasound for PE, I'm not super comfortable about, you know, excluding it on lung ultrasound. And I think that this just goes to show that you have to be pretty comprehensive in your lung ultrasound if you're going to try to get the results that these guys did.
Yes, and speaking of those results, the lung ultrasound performed fairly well. It had a sensitivity of about 61% and a specificity of almost 96%. It was definitely the lead overall as far as the three different anatomical structures they were imaging went. Cardiac ultrasound didn't do as well. 57 of the patients with a PE had positive findings on their cardiac ultrasound. It had a sensitivity of 33% and a specificity of about 91%. Vein did a little bit better, about 53% if you had positive sensitive, if you had positive findings on your DVT study, and about 98% specific. Now, here's the kicker, and here's, I think, what the author's main point is multi-organ. So if you put all three of these together and you had positive findings in at least two of the three, you had a sensitivity of 90% and a specificity of 86.2% compared to the CTPE study, which I think is great. Now, as often we find, usually there's, you know, little things that kind of sneak up on you on ultrasound, whether it's pulmonary edema, pleural effusion, an aortic dissection that you find incidentally when you weren't going hunting for it. If you found one of those things, so an alternate diagnosis and had a negative multi-organ ultrasound, so heart, lungs, and DVT, had none of the findings consistent with a PE, your sensitivity went to 100% with a specificity of 43%, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, anything that has a sensitivity of 100% sounds like a good test to me. Now, I think that's really interesting. Let me just go over those results one more time. The lung performed probably the best of the individual ones, so 60% sensitive, 96% specific. The heart was worse on both of those. The vein, a little more specific. Then when you put them all together, you get a sensitivity of 90%, specificity 86%, which gives you positive likelihood ratio of 6.5 and a negative likelihood ratio of 0.12. So that's pretty good performance for this test. And I think that it shows that together these ultrasound exams are better, at least when you're trying to rule out the diagnosis, so you want a high sensitivity. Now, what's more fascinating is what they did with finding an alternate diagnosis. So they're saying if you have no signs of PE on any of these three organ systems you're looking at, and then additionally you find another cause for the symptoms, now your sensitivity is 100%. So what they're saying is you will miss no PEs if you have all those things met. Is that right, Gray?
That seems to be what they're saying. I'm a little skeptical, only because PE is kind of that unicorn in medicine, right? That's really hard to pick up. It can present like anything, you know, flank pain like a kidney stone, chest pain like an MI, burning epigastric pain like gastric reflux. And so it's very elusive, and it's very elusive on testing too. You know, sometimes you'll see a consolidation or an infarct. Sometimes you'll see nothing on your initial imaging. You won't necessarily always find heart strain. So I find it a little challenging to say we're totally ruling it out if we find something alternative, because some of these alternative diagnoses are alternate ways that PE can present.
Yeah, that's true. And we have to consider, too, some of the things we talked about, like who's performing the ultrasound, right? So these were all highly trained people, very familiar with lung ultrasound and ultrasound in general. So we may not be able to reproduce those type of results if you're using a population of providers that maybe is earlier on in their ultrasound use. So that's something to keep in mind as well. Any other limitations you can think of for this study, Craig?
I think overall, like we talked about before, it was a fairly good study. It was a decent patient population, multi-center. The biggest limitation, I think, is that PE was fairly significant portion of their diagnoses. It was about 38%. And anecdotally, I don't know if that aligns with my patient population. Their alternative diagnoses were much lower. And I don't know if this is because this is already someone with a high pretest probability, which I think they're almost self-selecting out to have a better chance of finding things. But again, like you said, these are very experienced users, and it is a slightly different healthcare system than the one we're currently practicing in the United States.
Yeah, that's true. So how would you use this exam? When would you use this exam? Because I imagine in a lot of cases, when you have a positive D-dimer or, you know, just a really high-risk patient, you're going to get the CT anyways.
Yeah, I think I would, unless my patient can't get a CAT scan. Potentially in the pregnant patient who refuses CT secondary to the radiation risk, if you have that risk-benefit discussion, I think that'd be a great person to at least do this before initiating treatment. Or in the patient who's too hemodynamically unstable to get the CT scan, this would be a great patient to decide, are you going to start early heparin therapy or should you wait until they stabilize and then potentially get a CAT scan? So I think that this, especially, you know, given the fact that finding an alternative diagnosis does increase your sensitivity up to 100%, I would probably do this in those two populations specifically, or those who just can't or won't get a CT scan for various reasons. At least it gives me a little bit more information to work with. And I have fairly good numbers from this study that kind of would back what I'm doing.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. And another situation where it might be valuable would be people who are practicing places where there are no CTs. If you're in, you know, a poor country or in a clinic somewhere, traveling, an austere environment, practicing, there may not be that option to get the CT. So now you know how good ultrasound is for telling you if there is a PE or not. And I think it's also important what you talked about, you know, starting your treatment earlier if you suspect PE and your ultrasound confirms it. I think that's a good point. And furthermore, it's nice that they broke down the specificities of each individual scan that they did so that you know which ones give you a better shot at being right. So for example, the DVT scan, if there's a patient where you suspect they have PE based on their symptoms and then you find a DVT, there's a 97.6% specificity for that. And it, although all of the studies had a fairly good specificity, that one is the best. Right heart strain is a little bit less specific. So just keep that in mind if you're trying to rule in PE with your ultrasound exam there. And now let's hear Jacob's take. Jacob?
I love this study. It shows that ultrasound, while applied to the right patient population in the right clinical setting, has the potential to change the clinical course of your patients who present with suspicion of PE. I think y'all did an amazing job at summarizing the important points of the study and highlighting what the important take-homes were. There are a few things I'd like to mention. One of the things is the timing of the ultrasound machine in relation to the CT scan, which was the gold standard. They did the ultrasound within 3 hours of the CT scan, so either before or after the CT scan. In a perfect world, the ultrasound would have been done as soon as the CT scan was done or right before. The reason I would love this to happen is because venous thromboembolism is a dynamic disease. A clot in the leg veins can definitely move into the lungs during the span of 3 hours. Also, for the lung ultrasound, those subpleural consolidations they talk about are focal areas of atelectasis or infarction that are occurring due to diminished blood flow distal to the clot. These areas of atelectasis or infarction very likely can resolve or show up within 3 hours. The reason I'm mentioning this is that I think the results may actually have been even better if all the scans were done at the exact same time of the CT scan. By the way, if you want to learn more about subpleural consolidations in PE, I did a post on my website, 5-Minute Sono. I'm glad you mentioned the inferior posterior lung segments of the lungs being where most of the PEs were. This makes total sense. Sometimes you forget that the biggest chunk of lungs is in the more dependent areas. Also, the right lung has a bit more meat to it, so when I'm looking for a PE or pneumonia, I always start in the right lower lobe of the lung because statistically speaking, that's where these pathologies will be present.
Thanks, Jacob. Like Gray said, this overall really good study, and we applaud the authors for doing it. I think it's very valuable to have this information, and it can really change patients' management if you find one of these things or if you're trying to exclude it and you can't get a CT. So thanks again for listening. We'll talk to you later.
More pressure, more gel.
Ultrasound gel podcast.